Welcome to the Good Dog Pod. Join us every other Wednesday when we discuss all things dogs, from health and veterinary care to training and behavior science, as well as the ins and outs of Good Dog and how our platform can help you successfully run your breeding program. Follow us and join Good Dog's mission to build a better world for our dogs and the people who love them. Hi, everyone. If you don't know me already, I'm Nicole. I'm Good Dog's community lead. And today we are welcoming back the incredible Dr. Fran Smith, who we have been so lucky to say that we've had so many webinars hosted by her already this year. And today she's joining us again to talk about how to read and understand your DNA test results. So today is going to be a review of current DNA technology, including single versus panel tests, to help breeders understand risk assessment from a single gene disease test and to see if a test result is actually meaningful. So Dr. Smith will also teach us about basic genetics, such as the differences between genotype and phenotype and congenital and hereditary, as well as an overview of companies offering DNA services. So lots of exciting stuff for us to get into today with Dr. Smith. Before we do any of that, I just want to thank our partner Purina for helping us bring this webinar to life for all of you. And as always, please continue sending us topics that you want to see us cover in future webinars, because they are so helpful as we continue planning out what the rest of the year looks like. And of course, as always, we are going to prioritize some of the previously submitted questions that we received. For anyone who is not familiar with Good Dog, I just wanted to share a little bit about us and who we are as a company. We are on a mission to build a better world for our dogs and the people who love them by advocating for dog breeders like yourselves, educating the public, and promoting canine health and responsible dog ownership through events just like this. We are a secure online community that is created just for responsible dog breeders to connect with Good Dog buyers from across the country and find forever homes for your puppies. We help breeders run all aspects of their breeding programs from start to finish with tools like our best-in-class software to place your litters, post your available litters, connect with Good Dog applicants, and receive payments securely. We also offer a number of free educational resources just like this, health-related discounts, which is everyone's favorite topic, all designed to really help support your programs in all ways and help your programs thrive. So if you're not yet a member of our community, we would absolutely love to have you join us. And we invite you to apply at gooddog.com/join. And before we kick things off, I'm just going to share a little bit more about Dr. Smith, who at this point really needs no introduction, but I wanted to share a little bit about her amazing background in canine health for anyone who is not familiar with her. Dr. Smith became a diplomat of the College of Theriogenology in 1986. Since that time, she has been in private practice as a small animal practitioner specializing in canine reproduction. Dr. Smith is one of very few board-certified theriogenologists in private practice. Her expertise in genetic counseling, children frozen semen, and reproductive infertility of the male and female canine is known throughout the United States. Dr. Smith frequently speaks to breed groups, veterinary associations, and students, and the general public. Dr. Smith retired from full-time practice in March of 2023, but maintains licenses in Minnesota, Mississippi, and Colorado. Dr. Smith grew up in a military family that bred German Shepherd dogs. Not sure if we have any German Shepherd breeders here with us today. Her commitment to veterinary medicine began at 7 years of age and was confirmed in her high school yearbook, which stated her goal was the patter of 40 little feet, not human. So with that, Dr. Smith, I will pass things over to you for our presentation.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Nicole. So today we're going to talk about a topic that I get lots of questions. How to read your DNA reports, what your DNA reports are reporting, why you should do them, and what you should do with them in the long run. So this dog, who was a dog of mine who's long deceased, his name was Champion Danic Leap of Faith Master Hunter, is one of the high motivators for a breeder to do all of the things that you can do with health testing. He was a show champion master hunter, which is the highest hunting achievement that the AKC awards. And he was only the 43rd dog in the history of our breed to achieve that. I was his breeder, owner, trainer, handler. And as a veterinarian and someone who is passionate about the Labrador Retriever breed and all breeds, He's what you hope to achieve. Not only was he handsome and talented, he was a bit of a challenge in training in that he had his own ideas sometimes about how you should do things. And so that was always interesting. But he was profoundly healthy. And fortunately, he produced his talent and his health. And his puppies were often a little bit more compliant than he was. So as Nicole said, my name is Fran Smith. I'm a DVM PhD. I'm a diplomate in the American College of Theriogenology. And I think it's good for you to know what the difference is between being a specialist and having a special interest. The American Veterinary Medical Association only allows one to advertise themselves as a specialist if they are board certified in one of these specialties. And theriogenology, which is the reproduction specialty, is one of them. There are veterinarians who are specialists in surgery, dermatology, behavior, and one of the newer ones is nutrition. If you are not board certified, you may advertise yourself with a special interest, but you cannot mislead people that you have had that additional training. Typically, a specialty certification requires many additional years of training. So I'm board certified in Ferial, now retired, breeder, owner, trainer, handler, and judge of retriever breeds. I also judge sweepstakes and many other confirmation breeds. I'm the president of the Labrador Retriever Club, health chairperson for the Labrador Retriever Club, and the president of the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals. We're going to touch just very peripherally on the OFA today, but I will tell you that that organization is the champion for all of companion animal health. It's the world's largest animal health database. And this is a beautiful picture of DNA. I did not draw this. It's a stock photo, but it just gives you a semblance of the complexity of DNA. DNA, which is deoxynucleic acid, is the basis for all genetic testing. So first, we're going to talk a little bit about phenotypic testing. It relies on a diagnostic method that assesses an animal's physical state. To be ultra simplistic, phenotype helps you identify a dog as a black dog. It doesn't tell you what other colors that black dog might carry in its genome. And the very first health database that was developed was the phenotypic test for the diagnosis of canine hip dysplasia, which, as you know, is the ventrodorsal, or we call it VD, X-ray of the pelvis. This test for diagnosing hip dysplasia was promoted by the American Veterinary Medical Association early on in hip dysplasia research in the 60s, and so thus allowed us to have something we could share with the people who needed help in diagnosing presence or absence of hip dysplasia. Phenotypic tests are very important in the selection of breeding partners because many disease entities and many other issues are inherited in a complex manner. Parent clubs, though, gather health information from their members. And each year or every few years, the parent clubs at the AKC send out a survey that asks the members of the parent club, what are the most significant health issues in your breed? And typically from them, we help the researchers decide what they should research and what we can do that is most important to each breed. You might be interested to know, for those of you who are very active in dogs, that in August, just in a couple weeks, the American Kennel Club Canine Health Foundation is sponsoring its semi-annual Parent Club Health Conference, where they will share and discuss all of the important issues they've identified in the last 2 years. So phenotypic tests then are useful in decreasing the incidences of diseases that are inherited in a polygenetic fashion. Now, a question that I will get frequently is someone will call me and said, okay, I had my dogs x-rayed and I bred an OFA good female to an OFA good male, but yet there were still some offspring with hip dysplasia. There's a multiple answer to that. Number one, when we look at an x-ray, we're looking at what the dog looks like in a diagnostic process, but it does not identify the genes behind that dog. So when you use phenotypic tests, to use them successfully, vertical pedigrees can greatly improve the useful information published. So let me give you an example. I had a client in Minnesota who did a great job breeding golden retrievers. And golden retrievers, as many other breeds do, unfortunately, do have hip dysplasia as one of their breed issues. And she would commonly keep a puppy from a litter where that puppy was the only one, say, that got an OFA good. But many of the litter mates had mild hip dysplasia or maybe were fares, and she was always amazed that by breeding good to good, her progress in hip dysplasia wasn't as rapid as she wanted. Had she instead kept a good from pedigrees where the parents and grandparents were goods or excellence, that would have allowed her to make much more rapid progress in decreasing the incidence of hip dysplasia. And you can do that by exploring the vertical pedigree on the OFA website. So again, phenotypic testing is most helpful in yielding good results if the database is populated with both normal and abnormal results. So test results should be used then as part of an informed breeding decision. It is important when you have your dogs radiographed or when you have your dog palpated for patella luxation, which is also a test that is phenotypic. We do that based on palpation. But if the dog is abnormal, you share that results in the OFA database. That helps every other breeder make conscious decisions to increase the likelihood that the animals that they're breeding will be normal. When we come to DNA tests, which are genotypic tests, animals that are carriers should not be automatically discarded because that can have significant impact on the gene pool and lead to what we call genetic bottlenecks. The goal of health testing should be to improve health overall in next generations. And I also want to tell you, although I don't encourage anyone to breed animals with defects, in breeds with very small gene pools, you might have to use dogs with known genetic disease to prevent loss of genetic diversity. So we're going to look up a dog. How will you do that? We're going to go to the OFA website. You can search it by its registered name or part of its name. And you should know that if you submit results of radiographs to OFA, when you sign your form, you are allowing the OFA to publish all normal results. So what that means to you as a breeder, I'm going to tell you my kennel name is Danik, D-A-N-I-K-K. So I'm going to say that I have a dog named Danik Fancy Fran. If you look up Danik Fancy Fran by her name and it is not listed, it means one of a couple of things. It means that dog was not radiographed or it didn't pass. Or when given the opportunity, I did not tell OFA to go ahead and publish the abnormal results. The database on OFA is not restricted strictly to AKC. We do UKC. We do a Coonhound registry, a Greyhound registry, etc. And if you have non-registered animals, you can participate. And that does include hybrids. OFA then is the Canine Health Information System, allows you breeders and buyers the opportunity to evaluate potential health background. And we're going to talk about CHIC, that stands for the Canine Health Information Number. The owner agrees that the dog has been tested for all the diseases listed as mandatory for the breed. The test results are published, whether normal or abnormal, and the dog is permanently identified. There are over 160 breed clubs that participate in CHIC. Realize in the US, all animal testing is voluntary. We do not have mandatory testing systems, and I think that is a good thing. So here's an example of test results required by the Basset Hound Club. Primary open-angle glaucoma, that is a very serious eye disease which results in blindness and huge pain in Bassets. Mucopolysaccharidosis and thrombopathia, so they don't clot normally. So the Basset Hound Club, in order to get a CHIC number, you have to test for those diseases. For poodles, the most significant test is the test for PRCD form of PRA. That is a disease that leads to blindness, typically in middle-aged to older dogs. Fortunately, it is not painful. But it's interesting, the whole eye certification process was founded by the hard work of a breeder named Dorothy Trautner, who provided the money to start that organization because she was concerned about her poodles going blind. A newer breed for the AKC is the Beaver Terrier. They have the same form of PRCD as poodles do. They have hyperuricosuria, meaning they produce crystals or stones. They have a disease called degenerative myopathy, where they cannot use their rear end and they sometimes look like their lens. The Mini American, Mini Australian Shepherd has PRA. They have an important drug issue called MDR1. They are sensitive to many drugs used in many medications and in anesthetic protocols in the US. They have hereditary candidates. And that HSF4 is where the gene for that is located. Pugs have a devastating disease called necrotizing meningoencephalitis, which is deadly. And Schipperkes have a type of mucopolysaccharidosis resulting in muscle weakness and actually inability to walk as they age. So I'm going to show you, this is many of the examples that I will use are my own dogs, and I will tell you any dog's name that I use in this presentation, I have the owner's permission to share all information. So genotypic tests are tests for disease conditions inherited in an autosomal recessive fashion. That means if you are going to have the PRA disease that I previously talked about, in order to have two copies of that disease, you would have to get one copy from each of your parents, and ultimately, as you age as a dog, you would become blind. In most cases with genotypic tests, they have identified the whole gene. However, in some tests, the tests are based on linkage rather than testing for the causative gene itself. And I want to give you an example here because I think that's important. We talked about DM in one of the breeds I just looked at with you. That is a disease that ends up in loss of the covering of the nerves, so the dog's rear end does not function properly. It is not painful, but it results in an inability to use the rear end. Two copies of the DM gene means that genetically the dog is affected with the disease. However, there are modifiers with that particular disease. So a dog that has both copies of the DM gene may not live long enough to ever have problems with its rear end. And that's confusing for breeds that have a lot of DM in their pedigree. The nice thing about a DNA test is it's a once and done. It's not like the cardiac conditions we test for, where you should continue to check your dog's hearts years after years. because there are developmental cardiac diseases as well. For smaller breeds of dogs, the phenotypic tests that we would recommend, so this is for all of you who breed any of the little fluffies, any of the hybrids, whether that be Maltipoos, Cockapoos, I know they're not golden doodles, but any of the smaller ones would be a basic cardiac exam, an exam checking the dog for patellas, leg cap Perthes disease, that's disease, it involves the pelvis, it requires a radiograph, an eye exam. Just so you know, eye exams can be done at any age for OFA testing. The others are 12 months or older. All right, here is an example of an AKC profile for a dog who is actually owned by Eddie Zook, who is the CEO of the OFA. So this is the AKC DNA program. And so when you send AKC DNA in, the company that actually runs the actual assay is called Neogen. And so this identifies the dog and his date of birth, his registration number, et cetera, and when it was done. And then it reports the results of the tests that were run on him. All right, here's an example of an EMBARK test result. And EMBARK does huge numbers of tests, and it's done on what is called a microarray. The reason that companies use microarray is it allows them to perform a large number of tests at a lower cost per test. When DNA testing first came to fruition, tests were run one at a time at a pretty expensive cost. And I'll give you an example again when it comes to Labradors. Three tests that are commonly done for Labradors are the PRA test, an EIC test, and a CNM test. Initially, there were individual tests for each of those, and depending upon what company you used in the infancy, it could be anywhere from $75 to a couple hundred dollars per test. Now, with the microarray test, you can send one sample, and all of those, plus many, many others, come out on the microarray for a cost less than any of that. So this DNA test report actually is giving you the DNA information on colors on this beagle, also on shedding, and you can see that he does not have any of the undesirable genes for color and hair furnishings in the beagle. All right. So here's another thing that came back on a DNA test for a golden retriever. And this was an EMBARK test on a test called alanine aminotransferase activity, which is a GPT. This particular dog has a low normal. The nice thing that I like is that this test evaluates if your dog is likely to have liver disease, which in this case, the dog is not, and how you should better managing your dog's usual lab work. This test commonly shows up on any dog's annual blood work. So if you had a low ALT on your lab work, you don't really have to worry about having an ALT in a dog because it doesn't result in disease. So here we're back to another beagle. And again, on an EMBARK test, you can see this dog is clear for all of these conditions. If you do an internet search for the top five panel tests for DNA, the number one in every source was EMBARK. It tests for 230 genetic health markers, and it can identify over 350 breeds of dogs with 200,000 markers. The Wisdom panel is listed as number two. It can identify 365 breeds and 265 health conditions using 100,000 markers. Base Paws was listed as number three. Even though I did do some significant research, I could find very little information for that company. Test for 300 breeds, 200 genetic health risks, and 30 traits and tendencies. Now, traits and tendencies are hair coat, are you going to shed? Do you have a curly coat, a wiry coat, et cetera, et cetera? Surprisingly, and I feel badly about this, the AKC panel was not listed in the top 10 for any place that I checked. And I think that that's unfortunate because their AKC panel is outstanding and is very broadly applicable. All of these companies are accurate. Your tests are more reliable with more markers. So 200,000 versus 100,000, both AKC and Embark have over 200,000 markers. And your turnaround time varies with the vendor. Why is that important? That's important, say, if you have a female that you know carries a particular disease entity, and you're considering breeding to an elderly stud dog where the dog was not tested at the time of frozen semen collection. You really need to know, and it can be done, you can do DNA assessment on thawed frozen semen if the stud that you want to use carries this detrimental gene. So the canine genome was first mapped in 2005. They actually mapped it on a boxer named Tasha. The dog has 78 chromosomes and thousands of genes. Each dog has 39 pairs of chromosomes, and one comes from each parent. And the dog has 38 pairs of autosomal, meaning non-sex chromosomes, and one pair of sex-linked chromosomes. Males are XY, females are XX. I will tell you, occasionally we do have dogs that are what are called intersex, and so they may have an extra of one of the sex chromosomes, but that is uncommon. Variants of these genes are called alleles, and alleles may code for things like coat color. If a dog has two alike alleles, it's what we call homozygous. A dog with two different alleles is heterozygous for that trait. Observable traits, again, what we can see looking at the dog, are the dog's phenotype. Genes on a locus are the genotype. How are these samples collected for your testing? Most are collected by cheek swabs using special Q-tip or brush-like swabs. If you want to know everything, and if you're concerned what your dogs might contribute for the next 100 generations, blood that is collected, processed, and stored is the gold standard for testing, but it does require handling and shipping procedures that are more complicated. There are two main types of DNA evaluation commonly collected by breeders or owners: parentage, that verifies that the proposed sire and dam are actually the sire and dam of a litter, and/or that a puppy is a result of that litter. I just had an email from someone who purchased a Labrador puppy, and they questioned whether the Labrador is actually a Labrador. My recommendation was to go on the AKC website. You can download a form that allows you to question the parentage. And so, in that particular case, DNA from the puppy and the father and mother are collected, and it can tell you that the puppy is from that litter. On the other hand, if you have send in DNA on a puppy, and if they were to just send in DNA on this puppy to any of the companies that do parentage, no company can verify what breed a dog is. So by doing that, you cannot say this dog is not a purebred Labrador or is a purebred Labrador. I also like to warn people too, some of the insurance companies exclude dogs of certain breeds as far as being a liability for dog bite. They vary with whether they will accept parentage testing for what a dog is or is not. So DNA-based disease and trait testing involves collecting and screening a DNA sample for genetic variants. Parentage profiling uses a standard set of markers, which may vary from based on the panel used and are not interchangeable from lab to lab. What that means, if you were to do a parentage profile somewhere other than AKC's parentage profile, your results would not be the same as the results that you got from AKC. AKC has greater than a million dogs profiled, and again, an AKC breed profile, nor anybody else profiles, cannot determine what breed a dog is or if it is purebred. You can link your genetic health tests with parentage results. At AKC, the profile uses 200 what are called SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, and a gender test. Until AKC upped their ante, they were using 13 STRs and one gender. At AKC, in most laboratories, the technology involves a microarray, which is a big plate. They call it a plate. It's a platform with little wells in it where the sample goes, which allows testing for multiple disorders in a single run. It increases efficiency and decreases cost. It involves collecting and screening for genetic variants. Some test results are easy, such as affected, carrier, and clear, which are associated with autosomal recessive traits. Other traits, such as incomplete penetrance, are difficult, meaning the presence of the disease doesn't always result in clinical disease, and the same is also true of risk assessments. Meaning we talked about the fact a dog with two copies of DM does not necessarily end up crippled in the rear end as an older dog. For incomplete penetrance, it's important to understand the prevalence of the affected variant within the breed. And again, I'm going to go back to my knowledge of sporting dogs. In the Chesapeake Bay Retriever, a huge percentage of the dogs have multiple copies of the gene for DM. But yet, realistically, meaning what does that really mean to the dog? It is extremely rare for an elderly Chesapeake to end up with rear end paralysis that could be caused by DM. In the AKC DNA Health Report, they report 328 markers for health DNA traits, and they put the most relevant at the top. So here's some information about AKC DNA Health. It's focused, one test meets AKC and OFA CHIC, follows parent club recommendations. Educationally, at AKC, there is a canine genetics counseling center, which supports breeder decisions. And it's reliable. It validates the samples matching DNA sequences to pedigrees. And it's the only AKC-approved profile for parentage verification. Some of you may know, others may not, that DNA profiles are required for frequently used sires, which means dogs that have sired more than 5 litters, for frozen semen litters, and for foreign-born dogs. So again, the DNA and health highlights, it's a microarray. It's available for all dogs, including mixed breeds. It's available in two ways, as an AKC DNA health kit or an upgrade from the base kit. And the customers receive two PDF reports via email. Results are accepted by OFA. Dogs with AKC DNA health will have a plus health after the DNA profile on file and promotes purebred dogs and health testing in general. Again, genetic testing is only one component of health breeding. You have to do phenotypic health tests, and breeder observations are also important for overall health of the dog. So here's an AKC DNA panel, again, a sample. And if you look over here for this particular dog, this happens to be an Airedale Terrier. This report was provided by the AKC. And you can see one, we talked about DM. DM is right here. And you can see that this Airedale carries one copy of the gene for degenerative myelopathy. That would tell me that he is highly unlikely ever to have trouble with rear end lameness and weakness as a result of DM. The other important breed issues in the Airedale are coag factors, a clotting factor. Again, crystals in the urine and a trait called protein losing nephropathy, where the dog loses protein daily in its urine. This dog is clear of all of that. So that makes him a very, very healthy dog. Additionally, you can see there are color traits here, and he has the desirable color traits for the Airedale Terrier. It is important to know that a DNA profile may show a dog is clear of all known disorders. The dog may not be healthy. Clear does not equate with healthy. AKC color tests provide genotypes at the different loci that are related to color, but based on the AKC DNA and health test, you cannot tell what specific color a dog may be based on that testing. A resource for all of you to find out the prevalence of a disorder in your breed is located this following website. If you want something fun to read and challenging, go to www.mybreeddata.com. And it's an online update. It's updated very frequently. It's a prevalence resource that screened over 83,000 mixed breeds, 18,000 plus dogs for 152 disease variants covering the majority of 212 breeds. And a summary of the results are what they found of 152 screened disease. 83.6 of the variants were present in at least one dog. So what does that mean? It means no dog, no human, is free of all genetic disease markers. And so you can give up that idea. You have to learn which ones are important to your breed and how to manage your breeding program. 30 disease alleles are more frequently accounted about in 96% of the dog. So these are the diseases I would worry about in most dogs. And 40.5% of all of these dogs carried at least one of the tested variants as either the homozygous or heterozygous state. So that means in this huge collaboration of dogs, if you were looking for the gene for the PRCD form of PRA, the eye disease we talked about, 40% would either have one gene for that PRA and would therefore have normal eyes indefinitely, or two, so they would be homozygous and would have the risk of blindness. The most frequently encountered variants in mixed breed dogs and in a combination of mixed breeds and pure breeds are ancient variants. So since the dog evolved from the wolf, certain genes carried along with all of the improvement and the development of breeds. And these variants, which are ancient, so they're from their very ancient dog heritage, the wild canid, include DM. No wonder we have so many dogs that have one copy of that. That PRA, crystals in the urine, poly-eye anomaly, exercise-induced collapse, and von Willebrand's type VWD, and hip dysplasia. So that means all of our mixes, as well as all of our purebreds, share a genetic basis for those diseases. Now, in our purebreds, we have made a huge effort based on phenotype, which is how we have to screen for that, to improve hip quality by breeding normal dogs. Some hip dysplasia, hypo and hyperadrenocorticism, which are also known as Addison's disease and Cushing's disease, cancer, lens luxation, and patellar luxation do not differ in frequency between purebreds and mixed breeds. They're ancient. Purebreds, however, when we select for particular traits that we like, we accidentally drag along some genes that contribute to these diseases: dilated cardiomyopathy, elbow dysplasia, cataracts, and hypothyroidism. Interestingly, mixed breeds have an increased risk of cruciate rupture. So what you need to know about all of these tests is there's a difference between hereditary and congenital. Hereditary, the disease is caused purely by genes that we can identify. Congenital means a disease entity was present at birth. It may or may not be a heritable condition. And a condition that I always like to talk about when I give these talks is cleft palate. Cleft palate is congenital because it's present at birth, but it may or may not have been heritable. If you had your dog on some steroids or some excess of vitamin A or D or nitrates in the water, then you could have, particularly when you're talking about the sire and dam, it doesn't change the outcome to the puppy, a cause of a cleft palate that wasn't heritable at all. So this is complex. Do your DNA testing, but look at your results. And at the top of the results, it should list what diseases are important within your own breed. The other 250 are interesting for interest's sake, but are pretty meaningless to you as a dog breeder. The reason you want to do the whole panel is cost effectiveness. And ultimately, over time, let's just say there was a super stud in some breed that carried one of these oddball traits, and the whole country bred to them. In the next generation, you might see a huge uptick in the prevalence of that disease. I think we are probably at the stage where we should start some questions. Nate, do you have some questions for us, Dr. Ritter?
We do. Thank you so much, Dr. Smith. That was fantastic. I will say you answered a lot of the questions already, but it doesn't mean that we can't review them because I think people will find it helpful. It was funny that you ended speaking about cleft palates. We had a couple questions that came in asking, you know, are there DNA tests for particular conditions? Someone asked about a liver shunt. Someone asked about cleft palates. Why might there not be DNA tests for particular conditions?
Okay, that's a really good question. For a specific disease, we may not know the mode of inheritance, or it could be what we call a polygenetic trait, and it's a combination of a number of genes. In a couple of breeds, and I stress only in a couple of breeds, I know that there is a test for cleft palates, but it is not common. That being said, in any brachycephalic, so any Frenchie, pug, bulldog, possibly Boston's, it is recognized that cleft palates are at increased risk. So there has to be a genetic basis, but we haven't identified the genes.
Fantastic. Thank you. Back to kind of our pea pods and high school science, if you will. I was wondering if you could talk about the probable results when breeding a carrier to clear, carrier to carrier, and carrier to at-risk or affected dogs. I think people hopefully are clear with clear to clear and at-risk to at-risk.
Sure. Yes. Clear to clear is obviously easy because all of the puppies have to be clear of that disorder. Clear to carrier, from a genetic standpoint, all of the puppies will appear normal, but half of them will carry one of the genes for that disease that came from the carrier. When you breed carrier to carrier, surprisingly, you could end up with 25% of the puppies that, based on genetic tests, are completely normal. They don't have that gene at all. You will have 75% that will be at least carriers, but half of them will appear normal, and then you will likely end up with 25% who have the bad disease. So I'm going to make up a disease here so that I can explain that better. So if we're looking for a yellow gene, so we want a yellow Labrador, you breed a yellow to a yellow, you will only get yellow. if you breed a yellow to a black dog that carries yellow, theoretically, you will get half yellows and half blacks. If you breed two blacks carrying yellow to one another, so a carrier to a carrier, 75% of the puppies will be black, 25% will be yellow, but of that 75%, only a fourth of them do not carry yellow. So that yellow gene is hidden. And affected, if you breed an affected dog, so here we breed, we're going to call black affected. If black is affected and you breed it to a yellow dog, in that particular case, you would only have black. So an affected dog, 100% of the time, if it's a recessive trait, its offspring will always get at least one gene.
Amazing, thank you. I think we have time for one more. You, like I said, answered a lot of the questions that came in ahead of time regarding the incomplete penetrance. We have some questions that discuss, PRA or DM or IVDD. People are asking, I wonder if you could speak to the importance of still continuing to test for these conditions, even though, the result might not be as straightforward as we discussed with some other conditions where, okay, two copies means you'll have clinical manifestation. Why is it still important to test for these, and why should people not consider these test results unreliable, if you will?
Well, all right. So first of all, incomplete penetrance is very real, and genes can be affected by environment, nutrition, et cetera, et cetera. I personally never try to exclude any condition that might have genetic basis based on anything, i.e., if I have a puppy that ended up with hip dysplasia, I'm not going to say that that was because it was too fat or it was on slippery floors. I'm going to take the burden and say that was probably genetic. Incomplete penetrance is very variable. And say with a condition like EIC, which is a known recessive trait, meaning two copies of it, you're genetically affected. It's also considered incompletely penetrant because that disease requires a trigger before you will see the results of how those genes interact. And that becomes very complex. And if you discard the disease because it's incompletely penetrant, you can disperse that gene heavily throughout pedigrees. And I'm going to again give you a Labrador example with EIC. EIC is a recessive, but it appears to have incomplete penetrance needing the trigger. I, unfortunately, was one of the breeders who, well, first of all, I did help in collecting samples. I did none of the work. I collected samples for EIC research. And when they were done, it was pretty interesting how certain dogs tested that we were, quote, the breeders were sure couldn't have genes for EIC. And I ended up breeding a field trial bred dog to a showbred bitch. So genetically very diverse, both Labrador retrievers. And I ended up with puppies that had EIC. Shortly after I had that litter and they'd all been placed, they came out with a test, which was good for the breed, but not so great for me. And I had a phone call from an anesthesiologist who bought one of the puppies. He bought a female puppy, and she, starting at about 10 months of age, would collapse with exercise. Her trigger was so specific that if his children bounced the tennis ball off the garage, she would collapse. She could hunt, chase the four-wheeler, run all day long, and was fine. Did that mean she didn't have EIC? Not at all. That's how penetrance can vary from breed to breed. So diseases with incomplete penetrance are very important. If you didn't have the gene test for the gene itself, you still need to pay attention or you can accidentally really disperse these genes.
Incredible. Thank you. And Nicole, with that, we'll turn it over to you.
Awesome. Thank you both so much, Dr. Smith. Amazing presentation, as always. I just want to thank everyone for joining us today for another webinar. If you are not yet a member of our community, we would absolutely love to have you join us. And it's always gooddog.com/join in case you lose track of it. I also would invite everyone to follow us on Facebook at Good Breeder Center so you can stay up to date on all of our upcoming webinars, exclusive events. That's where we will announce things first. And to leave everyone with a sneak peek of our next webinar, this is going to be on Wednesday, August 6th at 1 p.m. So coming up pretty soon, actually. And it's going to be about getting a jump start on good oral health in puppies. I'm personally excited about this one. I feel like we haven't really covered this topic before. And we're also bringing in a new speaker, Dr. Christopher Smithson. So very excited to have him join us. Excited to dive into the topic of puppy teeth. So until then, thank you all so much for joining us, and we will see you at our next webinar. Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Good Dog Pod. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode, so be sure to subscribe to the Good Dog Pod on your favorite podcast platform.